Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin recently announced that over 850,000 senior citizens aged 60 and above have yet to receive their COVID-19 booster shots. This as the country transitions into an endemic phase and eases restrictions. Older adults still remain a high-risk category, a high-risk group for developing severe COVID. So how can we better understand what is behind the slow uptake for boosters among senior citizens? Our guest on the show today is Chia Tak Wing. He is chairperson of the newly established Malaysian Coalition on Aging. He's also the founding president of Third Age Media, which is the publisher of the Senior magazine. Chia, let's begin there. I'm trying to make sense of why, when it comes to boosters, there seems to be a much slower take-up compared to the primary doses. Why? What do you think is behind this, the large number of senior citizens who have yet to take their booster doses?
Yes, firstly, I'd like to thank Astro for having me in this talk show. And yes, I mean, there's quite a big number. In fact, I think 43, only in January it was reported about 43% of seniors has been taking the booster shot. So a large number, almost 2 million, I think, especially those with Sinovac has not taken their booster shots. There are actually many reasons to this. And of course, the social media is not helping, because a lot of people spend a lot of time on social media rather than reading the newspaper or following news on the TV, official news, So a lot of misinformation has been circulating around from anti-vaxxer and whatnot, So people tend to believe, because of their time spent on social media, they tend to believe information given in the social media, whether it's Facebook, whether it's WhatsApp or whatnot, And as a result, you find that, a lot of times, we have fake news, misleading news in the social media. So the government must actually make an attempt to overcome this problem. And rather than issuing ultimatums or telling people that, okay, you will lose your vaccination by this date if you don't vaccinate, So it should not be that way, It should be actually reaching out to the people genuinely and, telling them that the importance of vaccination. As many seniors are actually very afraid, because they have health issues, underlying health issues, especially things like, for example, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, And when they saw their friends dying, they know some of their close friends dying because of after taking vaccine. So, of course, they are hesitant, they are afraid of taking vaccination if there's no government rebuting, with solid data, what I'm saying.
Yeah, so Chia, if yes. I can ask you to to look at this, because what you're saying is that there seems to be a paradox, right? People have comorbidities that make them vulnerable. They're probably dying of those comorbidities, right? So that's one. Two, the disease, COVID, is actually killing people with those comorbidities. Why is it that they're fixated on vaccinations resulting in death? Why has that become, and because we don't have at least evidence of large numbers of people dying from vaccinations, why has that stuck in the minds of so many? Why aren't they more afraid of dying of COVID than they are, why are they more afraid of dying of vaccinations than they are of COVID?
Okay, that's a very good question. I mean, why are they afraid of dying from vaccination rather than COVID? Okay, and if the government is more transparent with the data, like especially those who died due to vaccination itself, I think recently the Minister of Health has mentioned that there's zero death directly related to vaccination. A lot of people have this trust deficit on the government, sad to say. All right. Anything the government do, they are suspicious, So, I mean, unless they show solid proof that these people died not because of vaccination, but because of their own underlying health issues, you know? Like, for example, they can maybe show the data before the pandemic, let's say death due to cardiac arrest and whatnot, compared to during the pandemic, you know? So if they can correlate the two, that they say that, hey, actually, you know, there's an increase in the number of deaths due to cardiac arrest or, you know. So people can say, hey, it could be due to vaccination. No, we do not know. You know, it could be actually that is the case. So the government needs to be very transparent about things, like, you know, and don't say that, hey, zero people. I mean, it may be true, you know, that there's no death. You know, it may be true, but support it with solid data. What we want to see is solid data, you know. I'm sure Malaysians are, you know, many are aware of the importance of vaccination, no?
Well, so on that note, I mean, you said that perhaps misinformation, time spent on WhatsApp, on social media has been, I guess, seeding this reluctance, this hesitation to get the booster dose. I'm just wondering then, all layers of society, all generations are on social media and on WhatsApp. What makes the that demographic, the elderly demographic, the senior citizen demographic, more susceptible to misinformation? I'm just wondering, then how can public health policies tailor to that? If we're talking about addressing that trust deficit and the misinformation, should communication then be tailored to, targeting senior citizens on WhatsApp, on debunking things that are spreading viral on WhatsApp?
Yes, fantastic. I mean, that is a very, very good suggestion, no? Debunk it using the same medium where the information are being accessed, no? Where the majority of the public, including the young adults who are feeding information to the elderly, you know, through WhatsApp, through Facebook, you know? So use that channel, you know? You find that the official channel is not working, use other channels, no? That information are more widespread now, no? So that should be the way that the government should address issues and have more stronger and better public relation and not use the old ways of doing things. A lot of, sad to say, at the beginning of the pandemic, especially in 2020, when the spread was actually increasing, the numbers were increasing, when the people who are staying in aged care homes or old folks' homes, they're actually screaming for help, for vaccination in their centres. But unfortunately, when they asked KKM to come to their centres to get their people vaccinated, this was not done, you know. A lot of complaints that we receive is that the people say that, I mean, KKM says that they are short of staff. They don't have people to send to the vaccination center. So you have to go to the vaccination center to get vaccinated. Oh, you know that many of these people could be, having some problems of bedridden. They cannot move and all. So you don't expect them to come to vaccination center to be vaccinated, you know. So KKM must take the proactive action to reach out to these people in the homes, in the old folks' homes, in the care centres and all those, you know, and not expect them to come up. You got to remember that care operators, they are also commercial in their approach. And to spend, let's say, up to 2 hours for one person to send one person to a vaccination centre would take up a lot of their time. So if they got 20 people inside the center, it takes 40 hours, you know, to send the patients to the centers, vaccination centers. So it's not realistic to ask them to do that. So KKM must come up with devices, not go through the official way, like maybe get the support from the doctors in the private clinics, you know, get the community leaders to come in, get the civil societies to come in to help. You know, I mean, it should be an all society approach, you know, in handling the pandemic, because many of the reason why people are hesitant to take vaccination is due to information not properly, or lack of information being properly disseminated, you know?
Right, sure. So, I do want to ask you, though, this is an issue of the booster, right? So the presumption being that the people that have been identified had their first two doses if they were, you know, part of that two-dose regimen that was given out. So why the difference? Why is it that they would take the first two shots and then be hesitant about the third? Is there there a kind of cultural or social or logic to this?
Yeah. Okay. Another very good question. okay, let me add on to what I said just now about getting people to the old folks home to get people vaccinated. You know what happened was that one of our members in the coalition, we just formed a Malaysian coalition on aging. So one of a member actually come up with a video on Facebook to ask KKM to take immediate action, you know. Only then the minister actually called for a meeting with the aged care operators, you know, the next few days, no, immediately. And actions was taken. And then people start to people start to go into the centers and to get these people vaccinated. But unfortunately, after the primary dose, things start to go back to normal again. No, people are not going to the centers to vaccinate. They still come up with the excuse of not enough staff and all those. So there's no reason, actually, if they can do it for the primary dose, they can also do it for the booster dose. So the government must actually take the initiative to reach out to these people. Because knowing that now, as far as reasons to why they're not taking the booster, it could be many reasons, whether it's cultural, religion, or whatever, you know. But I think one of the main reasons is that many may think that the two doses, the two primary doses, is good enough. Mm. So there's no need to go for the booster, you know. And there's this impression that people have, maybe that the pharmaceutical is making big bucks out of this, you know. And how many more booster are we going to take? You know, the question is, how many more booster? Science is still gathering data. You know, many things are not sure. Even President Biden has taken his second booster now. So people are already fed up with booster and jabs. We have what we so-call a condition called vaccination fatigue.
Yeah, SOP fatigue, pandemic fatigue, and coupled with, you know, trust deficit and all that. That's that great points. We're going to take a quick break here and come back and continue this conversation to look at this very pressing issue. We will be back with more on Consider This in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. The latest national census has revealed that the population percentage of senior citizens has increased significantly in the past two decades. There's been a steady annual increase of about 3-4% from the 70s until the year 2000, but then it suddenly spiked to 6.8% in 2020. By 2023, it is estimated that 4.5 million Malaysians will be above the age of 60. So let's continue our conversation with Chia Tak Wing. He is the chairperson of the newly established Malaysian Coalition on Aging on this issue. Chia, I mean, this is not a new discovery. We've known for a while that Malaysia is steadily progressing into an aging nation. But has there been, in your observation, a sense of urgency to have a national strategy when it comes to addressing the repercussions of having a nation that is aged?
Mm. Yeah, thank you. Yes, definitely there's an urgency. And the sad part is that the civil societies who are involved in aging are very frustrated with what is going on, because a lot of things has been proposed to the government, but there seems to be some dragging of feet. You know, things are not happening. And so we really hope, that's why the coalition, when we form it, beginning of this year, we hope to push and work as a partner to the government, not as a critic, but work with the government to realize the plans for the aging community, you know. So there are so many needs, the needs actually cuts across many ministry, you know, whether it's transport, housing, health, education, you know. So we are asking, I know this is going to be a long-term thing, we are actually asking the government to form a separate ministry for the seniors. And now this is because even in some countries, you know, like Canada or even Australia or Singapore, there is a minister for seniors, you know, seniors affair. And we need someone like that to head this ministry. If possible, even a non-politician. We want somebody like, who knows the problems, who experienced the issues, like what Raz Adiba, for helping the OKUs, no? She is in the same condition and she understand and appreciate the problems faced by the OKUs, no?
Yeah,
so same thing here.
It seems in the Malaysian context, getting the aged to lead the nation has never been a problem. I mean, in fact, that might be a problem in itself. And as somebody who's going to be joining the 4.5 million Malaysians over 60 by 2030, I must say that we often present these issues, and I hope you can sort of list some of those issues, because it tends to be dominated by discussions about health and the provision of general health care, and maybe old age poverty is another one that's hit the headlines in recent years. What other issues and even things that are more positive side of things, you know, the need for continuing education and keeping, older senior citizens more active and giving them a place in public life and such. What about the issues? Could you help us understand them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, education is lifelong learning is one very important area, you know, that if no point having a long life, you know, because of better healthcare, we have longer life now. But the problem is the quality of life. You know, if we don't have good quality of life, what's the point of living long? You know, so to live, to have better quality of life, we need to be healthy. We need to be active, you know. So that's why our association, we are promoting active and healthy aging. And one of them is lifelong learning. You know, if you keep the person healthy and active and both physically, mentally, emotionally engaged, you know, and being productive at the same time, the seniors will feel useful to society, you know. Now, I just watched a video recently about a community school in Australia, Kaila Community School in Australia, where they actually put this school next to the senior homes, the care center. And the seniors will go to this community school, you know, to teach, you know, to interact with the young people and those. I think this is an excellent idea, you know. We need to have that sort of new ideas to come in, to engage both so that, seniors feel appreciated. They also engage with the young people. When you engage with the young people, you feel young yourself, you know. So that is important, you know. We don't want to be seen as people who are just waiting for our time to go.
Well, I'm just wondering whether, you know, culturally, and maybe not just in Malaysia, but also in other Asian countries, it seems like... beyond the political scene, but it seems that sometimes, generally speaking, our elderly gradually kind of disappear from public life. They become almost invisible or disenfranchised and dependent on children or on the state for welfare. And I'm wondering, if you talk about aging actively, aging well, aging healthily, there needs to be a way to address this, that coupled with the productivity, yet without this kind of sense of insecurity financially, being productive and contributing to society without feeling the need of, you know, without feeling having to work until, as they say, working until you die just because you're worried about financial insecurity.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, the government actually have to look at you know, the way people look at work. You know, I mean, the seniors may not need to work from 9 to 5, you know, or 6 days a week or 5 days a week. You know, they can be move into flexible working mode or whatever. You know, so most important is engage the stakeholder when you actually come up with any policies, whether it's education, healthcare, and whatnot. You know. So we can, like what happened in Singapore, I mean, they are always engaging. In Singapore, the age population is increasing very fast. In fact, faster than Malaysia, you know. In 2030, one Singaporean in every four will be above 65 years old. One in 2030. So that's 25% already, you know. That's a huge number. You know, that's why they are actively engaging the seniors to come up with public policies, you know, and not work in silos and come up with policies on their own, you know. So yes, I mean, comes to social security for seniors, it is very much lacking. As you know, that the EPF report recently, only 3% of seniors can afford to retire. That is very shocking. But of course, many people may be aware of this already, like, you know. And to encourage people to withdraw because of flood, because of pandemic, I think it's really uncalled for. You know, in fact, in emergency cases like this, the government should come up with their own fund, you know, to help the B40s, the seniors, and all, and not ask people to withdraw from their own savings. And this is your lifetime savings, you know? And you have people with what half. I understand that is almost half of the contributors, EPF contributors, which about 6 million of them, only having 10,000 in their savings. So, and out of these 6 million, 3.2 million only with 1,000 ringgit, you know, in their savings account, in their retirement, I mean, EPF. It's crazy, you know. It's really, so that's why we need the seniors to continue to work, you know. I mean, that's the only way, you know. We cannot depend on our children anymore nowadays, because they themselves are struggling, you know. So we have to depend on ourselves. And the way to depend on ourselves, we have to be ready to be back to employment again, you know. But, I mean, the whole structure of employment has to change. Like, government must give incentives to employer, you know, to employ seniors and to appreciate seniors and not to look them to look at them as a, you know, they are no longer productive. They cannot come back into work. You know, Singapore actually is looking into extending the retirement age to 70. And in fact, there are some talks of people talking about doing away with retirement totally. So you can work as long as you can and you are able to, you know. That should be the way to look at things. No,
is that a good thing to, I mean, is that a positive thing to increase the age of retirement and to work until, you know, for as long as you can?
It's not to say, like I said, it's not to say 6 days a week or 5 days a week, you know, 9 to 5, that sort of thing. You have to treat it to suit the seniors, the mode of working, you know. So it is good because, I mean, firstly, it sustains them financially and in the long run. Number two, it helps them to continue physically and mentally to be active, you know, to be engaged, to feel productive, to feel useful. Why not? You know, I mean, if they want to, of course, those who don't need to don't have to go through this approach, you know. But it is a good idea to us. It's a good idea, you know.
All right. Okay. Chia, thank you so much for joining us today. That's all the time we have on this episode. The conversation with Chia Tak Wing from the Malaysian Coalition for the Aging that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Gupton, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.